This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll it. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We are back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Now, last night here on KOAL, you heard the Utah Jazz pick up a very important victory, topping the Los Angeles Clippers, and we're going to talk about that in depth and more about the Utah Jazz on our next segment. We'll bring in Dan Clayton of SaltCityHoops.com. Dan recently just wrote an article I definitely want to get into as well about the future of Gordon Hayward and the Utah Jazz. Dan covered the Jazz for a long time before leaving the area, but Dan, it's great to get you on the show today. I really appreciate you taking the time for us. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk with the homeland.
Yeah. So, I mean, you kind of have an interesting journey. So you covered the Utah Jazz for a very long time, and now you're in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. Moved to Brooklyn for my quote-unquote day job about 3 years ago. But before that, I had covered the Jazz for about 10 years on credential, mostly for Spanish-speaking outlets, and including the last 4 years, I was the Spanish radio commentator for the game broadcasts.
Well, definitely looking forward to getting some insight from you. Let's start by talking about the most recent victory, a big one over the Clippers. I mean, we talked about this game yesterday. Definitely the most important contest up to date for the Jazz. I'm not a huge fan of this matchup, but it's looking more and more likely like it is going to be the first round matchup for the Jazz. Last night, they take care of business at home.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're talking about being a playoff team and getting ready to play in the playoffs for the first time since 2012, you're going to face a good team. So I get some of the trepidation from people who say, oh, the Clippers make me nervous. Well, guess what? You know, OKC should make Jazz fans nervous, and Houston should make Jazz fans nervous, and Memphis should make Jazz fans nervous. You're going to face a good team if you go to the playoffs, and I think the Jazz are in a position where they need to, embrace that. And, you know, move forward and be excited about the chance to get some experience and credential themselves against, you know, a real live Western Conference playoff team. And the fact that they kind of lived up to that challenge last night was really encouraging, especially because, you know, the Clippers didn't really give them an inch. The Clippers have a smart game plan. The Clippers came, you know, prepared to make several runs, and the Jazz just kind of kept their eyes on the prize and kept going, even though there were some stretches that didn't go the way they wanted.
Now, offensively, last night, the Jazz were absolutely brilliant. For those who missed the game, they put up a 40 spot in the third quarter. That's not to say that the Clippers weren't great last night offensively either, Dan. They shot 50% even from the field, and yet the Jazz still found a way to get this victory, 114-108. I mean, that statistic in itself is very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, the Jazz haven't won a ton of games where they've done it that way with a crazy high offensive efficiency. And I think, again, I think both teams were really good at taking what the other team was giving them on defense and running with it. I think for the Jazz's part, they were defending the Clippers' pick-and-roll action. The Clippers are a pick-and-roll team. Like, they're the pick-and-roll team. And the Jazz were defending that by really staying close to the screener. They didn't want to let Blake Griffin go off. They didn't want to give DeAndre Jordan a bunch of lob dunks. And so they kind of invited Chris Paul to beat them as a scorer, and that's what Chris Paul did. He had his season high, but the Jazz were able to keep those other guys in check. And then on the other end of the court, the Clippers were really packing the paint and trying to wall off the Jazz's drives, and that led to a bunch of open threes. The Jazz had 15 threes last night that were classified as open or wide open, and they canned 12 of them. So again, they were just sort of taking what the Clippers' defense wanted to grant them, and they made the most of it.
You know, we talk a lot about what would be next for this team. And I mean, last night, Boris Diaw plays 21 minutes. That was a signing of the offseason that I was very happy with, considering his experience. And you mentioned it, this team hasn't been to the postseason since 2012. But as we get deeper and deeper into the year, Joe Johnson is a guy that, look, this is a move that is going to pay dividends for the Jazz, especially moving forward now that we're getting down to crunch time. He was pretty good last night, Dan. He wasn't too shabby.
Oh, man. I mean, Joe's been huge in a lot of games, including in games where the stat sheet doesn't even necessarily show you the importance that he plays. The lineups that the Jazz have trotted out there with Joe Johnson at the four next to Rudy Gobert have been really successful all season long, and now the team is starting to deploy those more. Quinn Snyder is starting to go to those lineups more. But I just think that there's a calmness about him, and it's hard to quantify this or even necessarily recognize it when you see it. It's just stuff that would make other players panic because they haven't been in, you know, every conceivable basketball situation like Joe Johnson has. Like, take that moment when the ball came loose on a George Hill drive, and, you know, the ball is loose and bouncing on the court with 2 seconds on the shot clock, and I think a younger player or a player who hasn't been in a lot of basketball situations would freak out and go, ah, what am I supposed to do? And Joe Johnson just sees that ball and is like, I should get that basketball and put it in the basket sometime in the next 2 seconds. And that's what he did. And I just think he has a composure to him that is really going to benefit the Jazz, not just in their last 15 regular season games, but into the postseason as well.
Again, our guest right now is Dan Clayton, covers the Utah Jazz for SaltCityHoops.com. Dan, let's talk about this recent article that you have produced. I mean, it really a fantastic read, and we'll give the listeners the info on where they can read it as well, because I'm telling you, if you're a Jazz fan, you definitely want to read it. Great insight. Let's talk about Gordon Hayward and how this guy has continued to evolve. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Gordon Hayward over the last couple of years. He was a restricted free agent just a couple of seasons ago. What's the future hold for him in Utah? When you look at the season that Gordon Hayward has had right now, leading the team in scoring with 22 points per contest, he's actually, I mean, his efficiency just continues to skyrocket, it seems like, throughout the entire season. He's been that reliable for the team. What does the future hold in your eyes for Gordon Hayward?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question for the Utah Jazz, because he has an opt-out this summer, and because of the exploding NBA salary cap, he's a shoo-in to exercise that option. He will, or rather to decline the option to exercise the right to become a free agent. The option year would have paid him a little over $16 million, and he's going to opt out, and he's going to have his choice of offers that start in the $30 million range. And you know what? He deserves it. I know that sounds like a lot of money, but the way the cap is exploding, and, you know, I think fans just have to take a stuff costs what it costs kind of mindset, because you don't get star players if you're not willing to pay star player money, and that's star player money in the NBA now with the way salaries are inflating. So I think the Jazz have the right mindset, which is I think the front office is willing to pay what it takes to keep Gordon Hayward. $30 million is a lot of money, but the cost, both, you know, basketball-wise and just to the franchise, of losing that type of a player is worse. So you just pay it. You just do what it takes. And I think that's the way they're thinking about it. But, you know, there's no guarantee that Hayward stays. I think he's more likely to stay than leave at this point. But then the other thing that gets tricky is if you're paying him $30 million, Rudy Gobert's extension is about to kick in at $20 million. They're going to try to keep George Hill. I don't know exactly where his market value is going to be, but let's say it's probably at least somewhere in that same $20 million range. You start to add that together, and it gets really tough for the Jazz, who have historically not wanted to be a luxury tax-paying team. The luxury tax limit next year is going to be about $120 million. So you start to say, wow, are they going to have enough freedom to put a roster together around those guys that can continue to be relevant in the Western Conference? And I think that's the set of questions that is really going to drive this summer for the Jazz. But it all starts with, is their star player going to continue to be their star player?
Right, and I do agree with you. I do believe Gordon Hayward will stay here long-term with the Jazz. But, you know, you bring up a fine point, and I don't want to get too abstract here into what-ifs, but, I mean, if you look at the salary, if you're going to pay Gordon Hayward that max, and again, you bring up the idea of Rudy Gobert's contract extension kicking in next year at $21 million. Joe Johnson's going to be on the books next year for $10.5, which at this point in time, it looks like a bargain, believe it or not. Some of the contracts, such as Derek Favors, at $12 million, maybe Alec Burks at $10 million. Those are a couple of contracts that you may just have to move.
Yeah, that's a really real possibility at this point. Boris Diaw's contract next year, by the way, is $7.5 million, and it's fully non-guaranteed if the Jazz waive him by July 17th. Even that's an option, and Boris Diaw has been good for the Jazz in different spots. I mean, you know, a lot of his raw counting stats don't look great, but lineups with Boris Diaw in them have been successful, and that's a sacrifice they may need to make to get this to all, you know, congeal from a salary standpoint. So they're going to have to make tough decisions, and that's the downside of building through the draft, is you get to a point where all of a sudden, if everybody pans out the way you want them to pan out, you can't pay everybody. You know, at some point, every team that goes through this rebuilding process has to look themselves in the mirror and decide, you know, who are the 3, 4, 5 guys we're really going to build around, and who is superfluous. And that doesn't mean that they don't want them. That just means that you can't necessarily afford to pay 8 guys starting, you know, starter caliber money. The Jazz have another interesting decision coming up with Joe Ingles. I mean, Joe Ingles has been really important to the Jazz. And if actually, if you take their preferred starting lineup and you put Joe Ingles in that spot instead of Rodney Hood, that group has been better than with Rodney Hood. And I'm not saying that you should change the starting lineup. Rodney Hood's a good basketball player. But I'm just saying that's another tough one that, Joe's top 5 in the league in 3-point shooting. He's going to cost some money to keep. So, again, you just start to have all of these decisions kind of coming together at once. Rodney Hood and Dante Exum will both be extension eligible this summer and fall. So all of a sudden the Jazz are in a place where, for years it's been the idea of putting assets together, putting young players together who might be good someday. Jazz are at a point where they almost need to figure out who are the guys they're really banking on and who are the guys who, hey, we'll keep you around if it makes financial sense for us.
Right. They obviously, it's not to the same level of media scrutiny, but they're floating down the same waters that OKC was down just a couple of years ago. I mean, it's a very similar situation.
Yeah. I think you're referring to when they moved James Harden because they were sort of committed to Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook being their stars, right?
Yeah.
And now James Harden is an MVP candidate, and he's not a terribly well-liked player, especially in Utah, so I'm sure there will be people who will bristle at the comparison, but it's totally apt. I mean, the Jazz may have to get to a point where they say, just to use your example, where they say, hey, Alec Burks, you no longer really fit with what we're doing in Utah, and then trade him someplace else and watch him score 16 or 18 points a game, you know, if he has that in him. I'm not sure if he does, but, I mean, that's the type of thing that the Jazz may have to live with, like OKC is still living with today relative to the Harden decision, especially if it's favors, because I'll tell you, I've always been a big favors proponent. I think he's a special player in terms of his two-way ability. He can score and he can defend, and the way he can defend is unique because he's both a paint protector and he's someone who can guard out in space and guard switches, you know, when his body's right. His body hasn't been right all this year, so we haven't really seen that, but I think Favors is a special player and probably Utah's third or fourth best player overall, and yet, like you said, you know, $12 million, they may be in a situation next year where, to make things work, they have to find out, hey, what would Derek Favors and a first-round pick get us on the trade market this June? You know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. But just like with Harden, it could be a decision that the Jazz make begrudgingly and then think about for years while they watch one of their players go be successful somewhere else.
Dan Clayton, again, of SaltCityHoops.com. Dan, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Yeah, so the article you were referring to was at bballbreakdown.com, one of the sites I contribute to. I also write weekly, and I'm the associate editor at saltcityhoops.com. It's a True Hoop affiliate covering all things Utah Jazz. And I'm on Twitter at Dan Clayton with a 0 for the O. So those are all places where you can find me talking long-windedly about basketball.
Utah Jazz basketball in particular, which of course the listeners love. Dan, it was a pleasure to get you on the show today. Hopefully we can get you on relatively soon as we make a push down the final stretch of the regular season.
Sounds good. I'd love that, Jordan. Thanks.
Definitely a pleasure to get Dan on the show here for the very first time. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up straight ahead right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m.